1-800-323. Now I'm getting the phone number. Why am I giving the phone number? We're on a fun drive. I was just trying to.
Have I flummoxed you?
Yes, you have. You always do that. Okay. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday, the 8th of March. Rosemary was giving important plot points away to Downton Abbey, and poor Mike hasn't seen it yet, so we were trying to protect him.
And he was going, with his hands over his ears.
That's right. Not all of us see it on the day. Rosemary and I saw it last night, so we were starting to chat, then we realized that Mike was still in the dark. So, good morning. Welcome to the program. Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, sir.
Hello, Big Joe. It's great to be here.
Good
great to be
see
alive.
You. It is great to be alive. Also, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is with us, as he is every Tuesday and whenever we beg him to be here.
Good morning. It's a beautiful day today.
It is a beautiful day. And tomorrow is supposed to be even warmer. It's pretty nice. And University at Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary R. Mayo with us once again. Good
Thank
morning.
Thank you. I would like to say it's International Women's Day. And Albany is celebrating at the Apalka Gallery tonight at 5:30 to 8. Great speakers. I'm one of them. That's not why I'm saying that. The
great
other
speakers?
Two are really great.
Who else is speaking along with you?
Janelle Hobson, from UAlbany, a wonderful speaker.
Oh, she's a great speaker.
She is on black feminism. And the mayor of Albany will be there, and lots of other women, and good stuff.
And by the way, just so you know, that because it is International Women's Day, we will be running a special in our 11 o'clock hour this morning on the program. And that show is called Women's Lives. And it is stories. It's a great special that PRI has done, looking at what actually happens when society empowers women and girls. So these are good stories as to what happens when you do things right.
Great.
So we'll be running that in our 11 o'clock hour this morning to celebrate International Women's Day as well. So thank you for giving me that plug. I appreciate it. And good luck with your event tonight. Let's go to what is happening in the news. And, well, the big story, of course, was what happened just as I was pulling out of the parking lot last night. It came over the wire that Michael Bloomberg has announced he will not be running for president of the United States. I think a lot of us sort of saw that coming. And although when you read the Times coverage, the ads were ready, the promotional copy was ready, the offices were set up. He was serious. But he was also in the article that he posted in his publication saying that he was not going to run, was also very clear that one of the reasons that he wasn't going to run, and Alan has said this all along, that he's a very smart guy and knows what he's doing, said, yeah, I'm worried that if I get in, it's going to give it to Donald Trump.
But he really tipped his hand, and that's what I really loved about this announcement. In other words, this is a guy who's gone back and forth between a Republican and a Democrat, Democrat and a Republican, and he said, it would be irresponsible for me to help Trump or Cruz to become president of the United States. And there it was. Laid it right out.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was ready. He had, as you said, Joe, he had attorneys ready to file all the necessary paperwork. It's difficult to get on the ballot in all 50 states for an independent candidate. And he was poised to spend $1 billion on the campaign, all out of his own pocket. The New York Times actually has one of the ads that would have been part of it, and it was pretty good. You can imagine that it would have been disruptive to an already disruptive political season. But I agree. I mean, you know, I think if he got in, it would throw it into the House of Representatives, and and that's something he didn't want to see happen.
Because he was polling against Trump and Hillary.
Yeah.
He was polling 33%.
But not enough to keep it out of the House.
Not enough to keep it out of the House, right.
The sad thing, though, of course, is that this is probably his last chance to do it.
He's 74.
Yeah, he said that this, I think he even says that this is the one of the three things that he wanted to accomplish in his life and the one that he probably will not achieve. So.
Yeah.
One could think that would be a good guess. There's an old lefty folk song, which is somebody wants to get up to heaven and they won't let him in. And he says, and whoever's coming up to heaven says, I'm a friend of Lady Astor's. And St. Peter says, well, okay, that's quite all right.
It would have been a very interesting campaign and a very interesting presidency should he be elected. But it just
do we give him props? Is it fair to give him props for understanding and putting and correct me if you believe I'm wrong in the statement of putting sort of the betterment of politics and society before his own interests,
as opposed to the spoiler in 2000?
Well, look, I love this guy. I want you to know that. I think he always has our health in concern. When he does get up to St. Peter, there is, well, he's Jewish, so I don't know. So
St. Peter was Jewish,
depends on your
theology. Depends on what old lefty folk song he's listening to.
Depends on your theology. But when he gets there, there's only one black mark against him, and that's going to be buying that third term.
Well,
I don't think
stop
that's
and
gonna
frisk make, was
I don't
kind
think
of
that's going
mark.
To get him out of heaven. It was, but you know, he orchestrated that third term, and it was a calculated move that let him stay in power another 4 years in New York City, and he's paid for it politically. He wasn't popular when he left office, not nearly as popular as he was at the end of two terms.
Well, I love the guy, and if I have to say this to
and
you.
I just mean this particular act, because this is
big
stuff.
It's a selfless act.
Yeah,
it is
right.
An act
of
putting
right.
the importance of the society and the country ahead of his own personal ambition, which is tough.
I mean, I guess if there wasn't all of this talk and the evidence that he was clearly going to run and him saying, nah, I can't do this because this is just going to deliver, they could possibly deliver it to this guy, and I don't want to do that.
Well, I mean, Alan has said all along he would only go into it if he could win, and he can't, his calculations show he can't cleanly win it.
Well,
so that's part of it. I'm not quite as idolatrous towards him as
no,
you are.
No, he has blemishes.
However, he did stop and think about the consequences of his third party candidacy, which did not happen in 2002. I think disastrous effects for the
country.
But
given a choice, right? Given a choice between him and Hillary.
2000, right?
Yeah, 2000. Against 2000 against
Al Gore.
Hillary, given a choice between him and Hillary, I would really have to stop and think real hard what I would do
and
in terms of a vote.
And I think he knew that, right?
Let's say.
He said, what would
Alan
do?
Let me throw out this hypothetical.
Yes.
I don't anticipate
We all
this.
Say that, Rosemary. What would Alan do?
Right. I don't anticipate this, but what if an FBI indictment, an indictment from a federal grand jury comes along related to Hillary's use of email while she was Secretary of State, saying that she breached the law by, compromising...
The perfectly good question, Mike, and the fact that Rosemary is shaking her head back and forth doesn't mean a thing to me. It's a very good hypothetical question.
I don't think that it's going to happen. I don't think it rises to the level of a crime. But should that happen and she somehow gets knocked out of the race in April, is it too late for Michael Bloomberg to to reconsider?
Or Joe Biden, for that matter.
We're talking
pie in the sky.
That's my bet. My bet is Joe Biden would be...
But he doesn't have the network. Of course, he would do it within the Democratic Party, I guess.
He would have the network.
That would be
you're right. Anything could happen depending on the sequence of when it happens.
Now,
someone could shoot Trump if you're going to talk about
it.
I am not advocating it. I am not. But his campaign is so much like George Wallace's and what happened to him. So, if we're going to talk about strange things that could happen, he is inciting violence, and that is a possibility. I think that's scary.
Any one of these guys, that's why they have Secret Service protection. Any of these people.
Yeah, that worked for Wallace.
Well, anyway, you make a point. That's all I'm going to say, but I doubt it very much.
You do make a point, because I have to say, as I was watching him yesterday walking through the crowd, I did think about that, because there are so many people now, which brings us to our next point, which is... in watching the 24-hour news channels, there seems to be a consensus of opinion that Trump is sputtering. He is stalling. That the numbers are going down. The poll numbers are becoming what they refer to as more realistic. He still is expected to win Michigan easily tonight. However, the numbers have become much, much closer with John Kasich closing in. So the question now becomes, as David Brooks points out in his column this morning, you know, is all along we were saying he's unstoppable. Alan made a great point yesterday about the closeness in the delegate count. Is he stoppable?
All I know is that when I was reading the polling from the various states in one of the tabloids, and I can't remember which one this morning, he's still doing pretty well.
Yeah.
He's still pretty well in the polls.
But so. The point to be made is that a lot of those polls, and we saw this, and I believe I mentioned this yesterday, that I think in Louisiana, or I guess it was Kentucky, they were saying that there was early voting, and the difference between the
points,
early
yeah.
voting of what he of the support he had versus the last week when he really got banged up. So when you start to see that now in those polls, which were taken a week ago, what has been the damage over the last couple of weeks?
No, I think you're right. I think your premise is correct. Everybody's hitting on him, including, you know, the Hillary people and, you know, and
his own party.
His own party, you know. So, yeah. So look, that kind of thing has to have its repercussions.
It seems when there is there are meeting after meeting after meeting of Republican leadership trying to figure out how to take the guy down, that eventually has to have some effect on the polls, but maybe not.
Well, it seems like if you're a incumbent Republican establishment governor and you endorse Donald Trump, it actually could backfire against you. And because against him in a sense, because he doesn't want to be associated with the establishment. So I guess that's what they're meeting in Utah and Park City, the Republican governors, and they're plotting different scenarios. But most of it hinges on him not winning in Florida, which is a winner-take-all primary next
Tuesday. Do they really want to give it to Cruz? They hate Cruz. I happen to think the Democrats are a lot better off with Cruz as the Republican nominee than
that's pretty
Trump.
Interesting. Okay. I think that my opinion is that if Trump were the candidate, it would be a stronger Hillary would have a better
It'd
chance.
It'd be a closer. You think Trump? She would be Trump.
You don't think Cruz is too far to the right for a lot of the country?
I think Trump is alienating people, and I think the polls are showing that, and that he is on a downward trajectory. People don't know as much about Cruz, and Mike. He's smooth.
Well,
I'm sorry.
It was on NPR today that Hillary has unfavorable ratings with almost half the voters in the country, but Trump has them with almost two-thirds.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of people, but I still think that
it's not a lot of people who won't vote.
That's true.
That's
what will happen.
I
think this whole speculation that he's going down the tubes and Cruz is catching up, I think it's a whole lot of political reporters.
You don't think he's
with
vulnerable?
Stuff. It's too early. I want to hear March 15th. Let's talk, because I think Cruz. I think Cruz
March
is 16th. Vulnerable. Yeah, and the day after. Well, we might know that night.
Yeah.
But I think that his idea about Cruz is right, that he will kill Cruz in the big states. I don't see how someone that conservative is going to win in places like California.
Not only that, but I believe truly that the lower and middle class crossovers, the Democrats will go for Trump. They will not go for Cruz.
Right.
They won't.
So, I agree with you.
So let's say the Hail Mary pass works and Kasich does extremely well tonight in the Rust Belt,
Michigan,
and then moves into Ohio, which is a winner-take-all state. And even if Cruz does well in Florida, a winner-takes-all state.
Right. Or Rubio could do well there. It's his state.
Yeah,
he's not doing that well.
No, he's pulling third, I believe, in the latest poll.
Right.
So my question is, you know, he still has to get to the magic number, and will if the governors in these particular states with the winner-take-all states, which we haven't hit yet, as you said, once we hit the 15th, is that a different,
game? Then you're talking about a brokered convention. You're gonna have dealing going on, and I don't count Trump out of that either. Where it's the line as well. If he doesn't get the delegates, he'll lose it at a convention. I don't see that. The guy loves making deals.
Exactly. And he walks in there and he gives them what they want. Yeah. Or as the old New York term goes, Joe, in terms of what you've just posited, forget about it. It ain't going to be Kasich. Now, Kasich is dangerous for the Democrats, because Kasich can pull, he has a reputation, I think undeserved, but he has a reputation as being the moderate in the field.
He's the adult in the field, but if you look at his record in Ohio, it's mixed. He did allow Obamacare, basically, to come into Ohio, which many moderates and liberals praise him for. But he's also closed down Planned Parenthood clinics, and he has some very extremely conservative policies that have offended liberals.
And I didn't mean to indicate that Kasich could win, but many in the Republican Party are saying that the scenario is that if Kasich wins one or two winner takes all states, if Cruz continues to win a couple winner take all states, that then the numbers become the math becomes more difficult for.
Trump will go to the convention with around 40% of the delegates, and that's not enough to win on the first round.
Well, you know, the first round, you're right, but I do remember being very old. No, not that old. That Franklin Roosevelt, the first time around, he really had to work for it when he got nominated. Remember who his opponent was? Anybody in this room remember?
What was the question?
1932?
Does anybody remember who
was it? A governor of New York?
It was.
Yeah.
Oh. It was Al Smith, who was furious that he couldn't run a third time and that FDR was stopping him, you know, from doing that. But those were the days that they had these conventions where anything could happen.
Maybe we'll go back to that with this year.
Is that good?
I don't know. It'll be exciting. The conventions have been extremely boring the last two. Yeah, that's my journalism voice.
Yeah.
As a citizen, it scares me. But as a journalist, all right.
Well, we're all like that, right? Yeah, you hear the scanner go off and you're like, oh, that's horrible.
Yay.
We have something to do. Right. Okay, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about other things. We have major stories to discuss. There is there's some athletic news we have. We have the Aaron Andrews story, and we have many other things to talk about, so we'll do that when we come back, plus get your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain making up the group this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, and we do welcome your letters roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and we welcome your letters, which we will get to in just a moment. Aaron Andrews has been awarded $55 million in her lawsuit against the owner of the Nashville Hotel, in which he was filmed while changing clothes in her room. The hotel's former management group and the man who did it and uploaded the footage to the internet. Andrews had asked for $75 million in her lawsuit over the 2008 incident, claiming ongoing emotional distress from the episode and the video's continued existence online. The 37-year-old Fox Sports and ABC reporter was working for ESPN at the time, and she grew tearful at several points during her testimony when the jury was shown the video in which she appears naked and when the verdict was announced. Her attorneys claim the Nashville Marriott, owned by West End Hotel Partners, was negligent in allowing Michael David Barrett to learn her room number and to rent his own room adjacent to it. The hotel is a franchise, and the Marriott Corporation was not part of the suit. A jury of 7 women and 5 men found Barrett, whose 2013 deposition in which he explained how he filmed Andrews was played in court, responsible for 51%, and the hotel companies for the rest, according to the Associated Press.
So that means one can presume that if he's responsible for 51% of the judgment, that we could figure that she'll get about half of what the... Because you
and
can't
the reason
get blood
for that,
stone.
Alan, is
you can't get blood out of a stone. That's
yes,
why.
Right. So, but because he doesn't have any money.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, thanks, Mike. That's right.
Okay, but there was some speculation earlier that maybe he was cooperative in this whole venture because he didn't have any money, so he had nothing to lose, and it was a way of allowing her to win the case.
Well, right? That's right, and that certainly came to my mind. He was very, very specific in the deposition and very cooperative. And I didn't know what could possibly be other than just telling the truth.
Contrition.
Yeah.
This is a topic that women are talking about. I came in this morning and I was almost late coming in here because I was talking about it with the WNSC staff, including Colleen McConnell, who is brilliant and a former lawyer. And here are some of the things we're thinking about. First of all, when I first heard the number, it was like, $55 million, cut a hole in my bedroom wall right now, please. And then it's like, wait a minute, what am I saying? Because this was a horrible violation. I do think the Marriott was completely – how somebody could come into a hotel and say, hey, where's Rosemary staying? I want the room next door. That's kind of creepy. So kind of creepy. But ESPN, I thought, was worse. Like, they acted like, really, did you like this? Was this something you wanted on YouTube to increase your... So you need to go on national TV and defend yourself. So a woman who her father testified very convincingly in court hated her body, hated the idea that her body's paraded without her permission all over the internet, has to go on national TV and talk about this with Oprah. So she was violated also by ESPN. That bothers me. And here's the other thing. Why is it... This is a case about unwanted exposure.
Yes.
Why'd it go to trial? Do you know how many civil court cases end up in trial? Not too many. Colleen points this out. Why wasn't it settled ahead of time? She asked for $75 million. Why didn't Marriott and the rest of them go to her and say, okay, here's $10 million?
I want to correct you and just remind
Marriott
was not a part
of the hotel chain.
Correct.
It was a franchise.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Right. Right, and I don't even
but
know.
It's a good point. Well, it's a very good point. Why wasn't
What was
it?
The speculative answer there, that it was brought to trial?
We go back to, because again, there's tons of money.
Voyeurism.
And the defense in this case, the defense was indefensible, which was that, hey, you really like this, you benefited from it. And
I agree, that had to be the worst.
The worst defense ever, and yet when you look at how it played out,
It's icky. The whole thing is icky. Where the defense was saying that when she was first recorded and this video went out on the internet, she was working for ESPN. Now she makes more money working as a sportscaster for Fox. Didn't this benefit your career then? And you know,
ridiculous.
And even the trial itself was broadcast all over the place.
I know.
With her crying on the witness stand, and it just.
I'm private. You're hurting me. Oh, remove the camera in. I know I should not think of that as a feminist.
Right.
I should be saying privacy and sick men.
I just want to say one thing about the $55 million. This $55 million judgment against the hotel and the guy that did this is intended to punish them. This is punitive. This is not compensatory damages.
Right, I understand
it's punitive
that.
Damages so that nobody would ever do this again and that all hotels chains now are going to review all of their security procedures because of this.
I want to just say that I'm sitting here thinking that, Mike, that for everybody who runs a business, I do, we all do, you know, who have, not all of us, but you just hope that some joker who is working for you doesn't really screw it up, right? I mean, that's all. Some dumb kid, probably. I don't really know the guy. goes anywhere. Doesn't even think about it. So your point is golden, which is from now on, you can be sure that this is going to be something that everybody on that staff is talked to about.
Every staff at every hotel. I mean, it's going to change policies.
Exactly.
And the thing in this Washington Post article that I sent out, this was linked to the story about the legal expert saying that the defense being that Aaron Andrews benefited from the peephole video. Is that a defense? I mean,
no.
I know that's what they use, but what I can't believe.
And they had to have something. And did it hurt them? Is the question. See, if I'm sitting on that jury or whatever. That would hurt. That would hurt my feelings about this. Is so spurious a reaction, a defense that I would hate. You know, the people who are presenting it.
Mm-hmm. And I like the side story about TMZ. You know, the entertainment website and television network program that they were first had a shot at using the video and they declined to use it, which was the right thing to do. But they. Basically, were approached by someone who committed an enormous crime, and they could have perhaps, reported him. However, they're saying that that guy was a source and therefore he was protected. But I don't know that counts.
Oh, yeah.
Not get into a discussion about TMZ and how ethical they are, because they buy these kinds of videos all the time and put them all over. But they could have, you know, they could have used some judgment here. Well, that sounds like an oxymoron, but they could have prevented this from happening by reporting this crime that was presented to them.
I want to go back to the idea that, oh, now they'll never do it again. Hotels and other businesses will be more careful. This is in the category of, we really needed training in that. I remember thinking that after Abu Ghraib, where, these low-level people who did the torture and humiliation had to have special training. Aren't there some things that you, like, kind of learn growing up in grade school? Special training
like
to
maybe
say—
maybe not give the guy the room next to says, famous person
with
the video equipment as he's walking through the lobby.
I'm thinking it really took a $55 million settlement for that to become part of your standard operating procedure.
Nonetheless, it will become drilled into the staffs at hotels and chains all over the country, and insurance companies that that insure these companies will require it, and they probably will change the doors. You know, that'll be the next thing. The technology of these one-way windows will not be vulnerable like they were in this particular case.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to some letters, and when we come back, we'll tackle our remaining two topics.
Okay, I'm with you, Joe. Here we go. Cody says, good morning, panel.
Good morning, Cody.
The Republican Party is an intractable situation. They cannot alienate the Trump voters, as they will sit out the general election or vote for Hillary. But they don't want to simply give in and hand Trump the nomination. Whatever the outcome, there will certainly be a schism in the GOP caused by this small-handed Frankenstein monster creation. We got it. Okay. Good. And then Susan, the Reverend says, Loretta says, I was very upset when they were saying that your career has not been hurt by this. This is not about her career at all, which she seems to have maintained well, despite, in capital letters, this violation. This was all about a violation of privacy and self and exploitation by a purient individual. I am glad for the Aaron Andrews verdict. This was a wrong, a violation that needed to be judged accordingly. I think I messed it up. If you wanted it to be anonymous, it should say anonymous at the top.
In the subject line.
Not at the bottom.
In the subject
line. Because by the time I get there, it's too late. Okay. let's see here. The idea of someone shooting one of the candidates, as mentioned Trump, is an awful thing to mention. And who would it be? Pulling the trigger? Dr. Carson said on Hannity the other night, when asked what he had learned from the presidential election process, that it is decided by the top of the national committees. They are the ones who control the process and the candidate. We'll see.
I don't think so, not this time.
There's no evidence of that this year.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And then we heard from Lars, who said, franchise owner caught watching video with friends in restaurant during trial. Men need to change what being a man means.
Nice.
All right. So you might want to comment on that. Okay. And let's see here. Okay. So says Carolyn to Rosemary Omeo.
I like that spelling.
Yeah, it's nice. O-M-A-I-O is our Mayo, for those who want to know. I found your comment about a possible attempt against Donald Trump's life to be totally irresponsible and unfitting for a prominent news station. Okay.
Again, it wasn't advocating. It was simply pointing out that it's a possibility.
It happened to George Wallace. It knocked him out of the 72 race.
This is something we worry about all the time. We worried about it with Obama. We're still worrying about it with Obama.
Absolutely, and we ought to be.
And Ronald Reagan.
We live in a culture that has made guns so widespread that talk about violence in elections, in schoolyards, in churches, any place is possible. It's irresponsible not to talk about it.
And Joni says, as Ted Cruz's possibilities go up, so will the chances of his candidacy getting thrown into the course because he was born in Canada. All it takes is one town or state official refusing to put his name on the ballot to trigger the chain of events, according to SCOTUS scholar Lawrence Tribe. Joni, who might be a natural-born citizen if Cruz is a natural-born American, because my father was born in Prince Edward Island and a Canadian citizen. Okay. Thank you, Joni. Let's see here. I'm trying to All right.
That may be it.
No.
Oh, okay.
Lisa says, Bernie won big over the weekend. You would not know it by listening to most media outlets. I believe after Bernie's big win in Maine by over 60%, his delegate count is 492. What is Hillary Clinton's earned delegate count? Do we know that?
I can find out.
Yeah. The media never gives us this number, confusing the public. I believe it's in the 580 range. Well, where did you learn that? You learn that probably from the media. What do you got?
It's in the media. That's where we're checking.
Yeah, and I also think, out of every one of these primaries, those numbers are up all the time.
It's
difficult
they are.
To get specific numbers because of proportionality. They're not winner state get all. Winner gets all states so far.
There's not a lot of super delegates like in the Democratic Party, so that
well, this is the Democratic Party. Oh, they're sorry, asking yeah. about yeah,
but,
Trump.
But still, as I mentioned yesterday, the Bernieites, some of the more assiduous Bernieites, are just very angry here. And we get sort of angry letters about why aren't you people doing more in this? More? Who had Bernie on more than any other radio station in the world than WAMC during all of this? But, you know, some people just lash out because they're not happy about the way things are going.
And this is, you're right, Rosemary, because this is an estimate.
Yeah, there's, and if you look at different sites, you'll get slightly at least different numbers as well.
So right now it's 1147 to 498.
Yeah.
Trump,
Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders. Your number's about 480
The Democrats have to make sure that they don't alienate the Bernie people so they don't stay home on Election Day.
Exactly.
They really need to bring his platform, you know, his planks into the platform, so to speak.
You're right.
You're
right. It makes me crazy when I get these letters about I'll never vote for her. Oh, yeah, and that means you're voting for the next three Republican Supreme Court justices?
Yep.
That's what you're doing?
You know, I think it actually might be part of his strategy. Don't forget that's how he began before it looked like he had a shot, that he was going to fire up the Democratic Party. He was going to push Hillary to the left. And I think the idea that he's staying until till the very end, I think that's a great idea.
Me too. And, you know, one of the congressional corners that I did with him very early, and he was talking about how the establishment was running everything. And I said, would you run for president? He said, I'm thinking about it.
Ha, that's funny.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. It'd
be good
to
dig that tape out.
Yeah, if we could. Barbara says, if the GOP manages to get the nomination away from Trump, I think Trump will form his own party. The crowd adulation will just be too hard for him to give up. He won't be able to resist, says Barbara. Interesting. Well, anything's possible.
He's totally getting off on the adulation. He loves that.
Are you saying that his ego is tremendous?
He has a very healthy ego.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. His mother instilled self-confidence.
Okay, and then our friend Pasetto says, do you think that Hillary would take Bloomberg for vice president? Well, first of all, that would be two New Yorkers. And while there is some discussion as to whether the Constitution really says you can't have two from the same state, it would not be advisable.
How about Secretary of Treasury? Or some position like that.
Well, that would be a good position.
Or make him the financial guru, you know, create a czar, you know, and make him that. And tell people that as she's running.
But I would say one last thing, and that is that I'm sure that if the Republicans don't take Kasich as the vice presidential nominee, having to win Ohio, you know, I just think it would be crazy.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have two more topics to discuss. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. We will be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Waka Waka, offering solar-powered flashlights and phone chargers that provide light and power to people who don't have access to electricity. No batteries or outlets needed. Share the sun. Waka-waka.com. Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services, including legal publishing and corporate record searches, ColbyService.com. And George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries, GeorgePropane.com.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the roundtable in our final minutes of our panel discussion this morning. We thank you very much for being with us. We do have some letters in regards to the delegate count that we read of people upset that we that I gave the delegate count, including superdelegates, and not keeping those out of it. And I'll get the full numbers here in a second. But just out of curiosity, wouldn't we count the superdelegates?
Certainly. I mean, if you're
the party is
if you're
right. I mean, that's you need that number to be nominated, and then that's included in that, right?
Sure. Yes. But if you're a governor, and therefore a superdelegate, and you've declared for Hillary Clinton, you count it. Those are the rules.
Yeah, I mean, I think Clinton, although she's getting knocked for this, this is what she's good at. She figured out well ahead of time what the system was and then put money, time, and organization into getting superdelegates because she figured that was a strategy to win. And not bad for a president.
It was a system that was really created out of George McGovern.
Yeah. It's a reform, yeah.
It was a reform.
And here is a letter from Jane who says, "Good morning, Roundtable. A friend was told that it is not necessary to like Hillary to vote for her. What a good feeling. Thanks for all you do, James." That's a very interesting point.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. People will be holding their nose and say,
choices are to be made.
You know, the problem with that, though, is if you don't like a candidate, you don't go out to vote necessarily. So all those young people like Bernie, love Bernie, and that's why they're going out, and he has a higher chance, and she does a pull.
Well, what will his role be in if Hillary Clinton gets the nomination? Will he have a role? Will he go out to get the vote out? And would that, I mean, that's
he
an
has
important
said
strategy.
He will.
He has said he will.
He has said he will.
There's nothing in his record that would indicate otherwise. I believe that.
And maybe he'll have a position in
so in pledged delegates, 676 delegates for Hillary Clinton, 476 for Bernie Sanders, 471 superdelegates for Hillary Clinton, 22 superdelegates for Bernie Sanders.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
And 2383 being the magic number.
Right.
All right.
But as Rosemary says, you know, and you know how I feel about Bernie. I love the guy. But as Rosemary said, you know, that's what you need to get nominated.
Yeah, that's what it is. She figured out the system, and she's gaming it. And
I don't know that she's gaming.
I don't think Bernie
gaming is pejorative. She's using the system.
Yeah, she's using the system, isn't that? Well, she is.
I don't know. And
that is not to say that Bernie could not have done the same. But I think he decided to come into the race much later than she did. Did not think for a long time he had a chance. And so he's at a disadvantage among superdelegates.
See, I don't agree with you. I think that Bernie is the alternative candidate who is more pure and from the left and is right about everything he says, by the way.
Do you have an opinion about this race?
I think he's just right about what he says. You know what? There isn't a concentration of wealth in America. The banks aren't out of control. The rest of this kind of stuff. Come on. Did Bernie take hundreds of thousands of dollars from people to
Goldman Sachs?
Yeah, right. You know, I mean, give me a break.
He should have. He might be winning. It's the way elections have been run in this country for a long time. I'm sorry.
A very spurious
pure
reaction.
Pure ideals do not make a good president. We saw that with Jimmy Carter. We saw it with Woodrow Wilson. We saw it with Barack Obama to a certain extent. He became much more effective in his second term when he figured out, executive powers, I can use this. He's using the system.
I don't get it. I just don't. I think sometimes you have a certain blindness towards, you know, what's good about Hillary. And then you're right. Oh, stop it. And that you reach too far in order to justify anything she does.
All right.
Abrupt silence.
Yes. With that, let's move on to a topic I was mentioning before to the group here that when I was looking through stories last night, one of the ones that I found fascinating, but I just couldn't figure out how to link it in, was that the man who did the at sign, so if it's Joe at WAMC, the guy who came up with that passed away. His name was Raymond Tomlinson, and I thought, well, okay, wow. That's an interesting story, but I don't know how to include it. And then Mike sends me this. He's a local guy.
Right. Eric Anderson, our business editor, was able to talk to some of Ray Tomlinson's family members. Ray was born in Amsterdam. His family moved up towards Broad Auburn, where he went to high school, and he's regarded as the brightest person ever to graduate. Back in 1959, he graduated, but he to ever graduate from the school system. He went on to Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, and after that, he went to Massachusetts to work for a company that was working on something called ARPANET back in the early 1970s. It was a precursor to the internet. And he came up with the idea of using the at symbol in addressing internet communications, which essentially was, and he's credited with inventing email. So all that spam you get, I guess you can blame Ray Tomlinson for it. But Shirley Ann Jackson, the president at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, said that he changed the way the world communicates. He basically set the way that we all use social media today, and it really has had a profound impact. And he's in the Internet Hall of Fame.
And
certainly was a great
guy. And apparently very quiet. Has the Times Union written about him, like, during his lifetime?
No. I mean, we've mentioned it a few times, but we've had a few things in the clips. The interesting thing is that he was at work Friday, his brother said. You know, he was just plugging along. His death was unexpected. He died at home over the weekend. He was 74, I believe.
Oh, that's bad.
And
isn't
no, but his one brother said, we you know, after their parents died, he hasn't been making as many trips back to the Mohawk Valley, and they've kind of, you know, they don't keep in touch that much because his brother really doesn't use email. it's a great contribution that Ray made to the world, and he's being finally remembered for it. And I'm sure he'll be honored more at RPI has amazing things to say about him. They're very proud of their alum, and just a great local story of a guy who came out of Amsterdam and did really well.
Well, we're going to end on that story this morning. We thank you very much for being with us and for writing your letters. You can continue to do so. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, thank you all for being here as always. A thrill to be with you. We will continue our program coming up after this.